you hear it in the political debate around this a lot, that, oh, we need stable baseload energy supply, except, of course, we don't have baseload demand. We would have something like that if we were all aluminium smelters.
Aren't you?
One for mum, one for dad, one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be in Australia.
Dead, buried, cremated.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Australia Institute, and today we're talking energy policy with Richard Dennis, our Chief Economist, and Rod Campbell, our Director of Research. There's been a flurry of activity in the energy debate in the past few months. Every second day there seems to be some new announcement, and Prime Minister Turnbull's most recent announcement might sound familiar to fans of ABC's Utopia.
The projects that we are talking about today, which will add at least 50% to the capacity of the Snowy Mountains hydro scheme. These projects were designed and engineered decades ago.
The numbers just don't stack up.
You've got to look beyond the numbers. Vision, Tony.
Jim.
If we'd listened to the bean counters, we never would have built the Snowy.
The Snowy was a white elephant.
Are you kidding me? The Snowy forged this nation.
But I don't think it's ever turned a profit.
Oh, stop it. I'm not even going to listen to that.
But environmentally, it was a disaster.
Hydroelectricity? I did a project on that at school.
But it supplies like less than 1% to the grid.
And what about everything else the Snowy's given us?
What else?
That mini-series?
Jim, they're white elephants, just like the very fast train. The numbers don't stack up.
The PM's very keen.
You've told the Prime Minister.
The backbenchers are restless. Seriously, he's got to come up with some sort of 30-year vision in the next 3 weeks, or it's
gone.
Earlier this year, as temperatures in South Australia soared above 40 degrees, the power networks cut power to more than 40,000 homes for more than half an hour, just as people came home after work and school and tried to cook dinner. The state had already suffered blackouts last year when a severe storm damaged several transmission lines, but each time the federal government pointed the finger squarely at the state's use of renewable energy.
The reality is the South Australian Labor government introduced a massive amount of renewables into their grid and did not plan for the consequences.
Why then, on the exact same day of receiving this advice, did the Prime Minister and his Energy Minister blame renewable energy for the blackout?
The Prime Minister made a deliberate decision to ignore that advice and to lie to the Australian people.
State governments need to take responsibility for ensuring the stability of the system.
I've got to say, it is a little galling to be standing here next to a man that's been standing up with his Prime Minister, bagging South Australia at every step of the way, him suggesting that we want to work together. It is a disgrace.
Look, I think it's a bit sad. What we've really seen is the Turnbull government sliding in the polls. They need to shake things up. They needed to pick a new fight. And unfortunately for every electricity consumer in Australia, the blackouts in South Australia gave them an opportunity to dust off an old playbook about coal being good and renewables being bad. The fact that it was an unusual cyclone that blew down 20 transmission towers, the fact that it was the climate that caused the blackout, well, only in Australia would you blame renewable energy for that. So, yeah, I think they're desperately trying to distract the public from problems that they can't fix by creating a new imaginary problem.
Howard had his petrol prices, Abbott had his carbon tax. I think they're trying to go for expensive electricity again, but I just don't think the public's going to buy it because it's not true.
Let's talk about some basic economics when it comes to the price of electricity and power bills. Is it all a question of supply and demand, Richard?
Look, it is. Of course, you know, saying that the price is set by supply and demand is like saying a plane crashed because of gravity. there's usually a little bit more to it than that. But yeah, ultimately, the amount of energy that's supplied to the market and the amount of demand for energy at any point in time is what sets the price. And if too many people want more power than the market can supply at any point in time, just like a fish shop can run out of prawns, the electricity market can run out of electricity, and that's when we get blackouts.
We hear a lot from the Liberal Party at the moment when they're in government about business needing certainty. And when they say that, what is it that they mean, Richard?
Well, you'd have to ask them because they haven't been terribly consistent. But generally speaking, firms don't want to make long-term investments if they're not sure what the regulatory environment is going to look like over the life of the asset. So what we've seen for the last decade is the Conservatives in particular creating chaos when it comes to the electricity system. So after a lengthy consultation process, we finally introduced a very modest carbon price with very generous compensation, and that was ripped up a few years later. And since then, of course, we've seen direct action come in. We've seen the renewable energy target cut once by Tony Abbott, and now there's proposals to cut it again. If the electricity industry needs certainty, they're actually getting the exact opposite at the moment.
What is the consequence of all that uncertainty being, Rod? How's investment and certainty in the energy industry going?
Yeah, not so good. You had our former resource minister Ian McFarland a few years back saying that, you know, with some certainty, that no one would build any more coal-fired power stations in Australia. And he had that certainty because he imagined that policy settings would be adopted to either price carbon or other kinds of action on climate change that would make coal-fired power stations bad investments. So Ian McFarland was very certain that no one would build coal-fired power stations a few years ago, and sure enough, nobody has. People were building renewable energy when we had steady renewable energy policy, and when we stopped having that under the Abbott government, well, investment fell off a cliff at a time when it was going in the other direction internationally.
And creating jobs and growth.
Yeah, there were both jobs and growth involved.
That's why it had to be killed off. Mm.
So if we do have certainty for industry and people are investing in putting additional renewable energy supply into the market, what happens to prices over the long term?
Well, according to climate skeptic and Tony Abbott appointee to review the renewable energy target, Dick Warburton, pushes the electricity price down.
No.
I know. So, yes, when Tony Abbott was Prime Minister, one of the first things he did was set up a new inquiry into the renewable energy target, and the modelling commissioned by Dick Warburton showed that the renewable energy target pushed prices down. It's not really controversial. When you increase the supply of electricity relative to the demand, then the price falls. Since then, we've seen half a dozen modelling exercises concluding the same thing.
The exact same thing.
But day after day, we hear that building renewable energy makes electricity dearer.
We've seen massive increases in energy costs, way above the rate of inflation. It is putting real pressure on Australian families.
One of the government's scare campaigns is they say things like, well, let's look at Labor's renewable energy target, how much money would need to be spent to build the wind turbines and build the solar farms. Let's add that up and say, look at the cost of building all of that new energy supply. And then they say, and that cost will obviously be passed on to you, the consumer. Well, of course it will. But when a car company builds a big new factory, you've never heard someone say, oh, that new car factory is just going to drive up the price of cars because all of the cost of the factory will be passed on to consumers. Of course it will. But increasing the supply, again, relative to the demand, pushes the price down. It's a sleight of hand. What they're kind of pretending is if we don't spend money building new wind turbines, if we don't spend money on solar panels, then we'd save a lot of money and electricity would be cheap. But we've got growing population. We've got energy shortages on hot days. The last thing we want to do is not invest in new supply. And, of course, renewable energy is low emissions and cheap.
Do we have baseload cars? Or are there peaks of car?
Well, there's certainly, that's a good analogy because they've got baseload taxis. And what that means is at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or on New Year's Eve, no one can find one.
Mm.
You know, the problem with the electricity market is we get these big peaks in demand for energy, mainly on hot afternoons when kids come home from school, the air conditioners are on and the factories are still open. So we get these big peaks in demand. And by definition, a baseload power station can't increase output to meet that demand. So what we really need is to match the supply to those peak demands.
Well, it's a real crisis.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
Unless we fix this very soon, then South Australia will be the state that businesses will not want to come to.
It's really a very misleading term, and you hear it in the political debate around this a lot, that, we need stable baseload energy supply, except, of course, we don't have baseload demand. We would have something like that if we were all aluminium smelters.
Aren't you?
This isn't the great leap forward.
You come round to mine.
So everyone except for Richard, who doesn't own an aluminium smelter that needs a huge amount of electricity very, very steadily through the day and through the year and very secure. We don't demand electricity in base load. We demand it in enormous peaks on hot days and in some places in the country on very cold days. And so the real challenge is that meeting that demand with supply. And that's probably not going to come from enormous new baseload power stations.
Richard, you were talking about the fact that we've actually got, we don't have a baseload problem, we've got a peak demand problem. Can you just explain what you mean by that?
If you think about the amount of electricity consumed at any point in the day, it's not stable over time. At 4 o'clock in the morning, there's very little demand for electricity. People wake up in the morning, they start putting the toaster on, they start putting the television on, demand spikes. When factories and commercial buildings show up 9 to 5, we see demand go up again. As Rod said before, the aluminium smelters are just kind of belting out the same amount of demand all day, every day. But the real peaks that we get are on the very hot days when everyone turns their air conditioners on at the same time. So we have a very volatile demand for energy. And so much of making the grid work, the electricity system work, is matching that supply and demand all day long. Now, renewable energy has a lot of advantages for this. Solar pumps out a lot of electricity late in the afternoon.
Yeah.
When you combine that with battery storage, it gets even better. And, of course, the government loves to talk about reliable baseload power stations. But, of course, we've seen recently a whole bunch of gas and coal-fired power stations breaking down. All electricity generation has the potential to not be available exactly when you want it. And again, a good electricity market copes with that, doesn't complain about it.
Not just breaking down, but not turning on.
Yes.
Just because they've decided not to, possibly because they've already sold their gas
for
the export market.
So or some of them apparently melted. So
what? Where, where was that?
Some of the gas-fired power stations, the componentry just couldn't cope with the temperature.
Oh my goodness, are you kidding me?
Yeah. And of course, you know, historically we've seen enormous explosions and disruptions when gas pipelines and gas power stations have literally exploded. So again, all forms of energy have the potential to not be there exactly when you need them. The question is how we match supply to demand. They charge more to go to the movies on a Saturday night than they do on a Tuesday morning. Why? Because there's peak demand on Saturday night and everyone can't fit in, so they charge a higher price. Similarly, in Christmas time, the price of prawns goes through the roof because everyone knows you celebrate Christmas by eating prawns. I mean, that's what Jesus wanted. but the problem is the prawns aren't in on it, so they keep breeding at a steady rate, a bit like a baseload power station. So
baseload prawns?
Base prawns. So big picture, all countries have to struggle with how do we match volatile demand to supply, but the idea that if we just build enough coal, everything will be okay. Well, if that's the case, why were there so many blackouts when I was growing up in the 1980s?
We have to deliver energy security. Rule one, keep the lights on.
What are the things that are actually going wrong that we could fix that aren't necessarily building new demand?
Well, we've got a system that works very well for the incumbents. The people who belt out the same amount of electricity all day, every day, love it when there's a big spike in demand because the price goes through the roof and they get to sell it for a really high price.
Yeah.
But if you were trying to design an efficient electricity market, you'd do everything you could to make those peaks disappear. We can easily remote switch everybody's air conditioner off for 10 or 15 minutes. You wouldn't even notice, because air conditioners don't run permanently on a thermostat. We could remote switch pool filters, and you only have to do it for the 5 or 10 minutes during these moments of peak demand. The technology exists, and in other countries the rules exist, where big users of energy effectively say, look, if it's useful for me to switch some stuff off, let me know, pay me some money and I'll turn it off.
Yeah.
I'd love to get paid to not run my factory for 10 or 15 minutes. Some factories want reliable 24-hour continuous electricity. Others would happily receive a cash payment. If we wanted to modify demand, we could, but the incumbents don't want us to.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that a proposal to pay big electricity users to switch off for 5 or 10 minutes, a proposal for exactly this is in front of the Australian Energy Market Commission at the moment. It was proposed by a smelter who wants to be able to be paid to do exactly that.
And what would happen if you implemented this 5-minute rule?
If factories had smelters suddenly had the option of being paid substantial amounts of money to turn off for 5 or 10 minutes, they'd probably do it. And what would happen is that those big spikes in electricity demand, and therefore the big spikes in electricity price, suddenly wouldn't be there anymore. They'd be evened out.
And the idea, if a shadow passes over the sun and, you know, solar energy falls for 5 minutes, it's okay. Someone shuts something down for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
We know how to do this.
Talking about efficiency and having an efficient market, is that really how it operates?
Yeah, no.
One of the big things to happen in Australian energy in the last 10 years was our demand stopped growing. For quite a few years there, I think it was 4 or 5, each year we used less electricity than we did the year before. A big part of what caused that sudden decline in Australian energy demand were our energy efficiency standards. Governments had legislated energy efficiency requirements for appliances and buildings, and our teams went around looking at things like municipal pools and their heating and talking about how they could do that more efficiently. Investment in energy efficiency has huge payoffs like that, and that was a big part of why we didn't see increasing demand for electricity, which led to one of the big early fights over the renewable energy target of, and was it still really a real 23%, because our demand didn't grow as much. So, yeah, old-fashioned energy efficiency and turning the light off can really pay off.
We love wasting energy. Let me give you an example. The biggest use of electricity in Australian households is heating water, and the most common way to heat water is via an off-peak hot water system. Now, how do we heat that up? Well, first we dig up some coal, transport it to a coal-fired power station, burn the coal, use the heat from the coal to turn water into steam. The steam spins a turbine, the turbine spins magnets inside a wire coil, and we've got electricity. We've lost about half of the energy in that process. Then we send the electricity hundreds of kilometres along copper wire networks, losing 10 to 15% along the way. The electricity comes into your off-peak hot water system, and it heats half a tonne of water up to a temperature that's just hot enough to burn your children and not hot enough to have a cup of tea with. And then when you step into the shower in the morning, you turn the hot tap on and you go, oh, shit, that's hot, and you add cold to it. It is almost inconceivable that you could come up with a less efficient way to heat water. And that's the point. These things were invented to soak up base load supply.
Yeah.
At 4 o'clock in the morning, that's what the electricity's doing. Heating huge quantities of water to the wrong temperature.
Does that offend you as an economist, Richard?
It offends me in so many ways. You couldn't get a less efficient battery.
That's been episode 17 of Follow the Money, brought to you by the Australia Institute. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and rate us on iTunes. It really helps other people to find the podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes or find previous episodes at our website, tai.org.au/podcasts. I'm on Twitter at Ebony_Bennett with a double N double T. You can find more of Richard and Rod's analysis on energy policy at our website, or you can follow Richard at RDNS_TAI, and Rod is R_O_D_C. The Twitter handle for the Australia Institute is at the Oz Institute with an AUS. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy. Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum composed our title track, and you can find more of his music at pulseandthrum.com. Thanks for listening.